ultimate purpose is to infuse more empathy into the world. I really like the idea of one, being able to facilitate connection amongst people, and two, to be able to move them. I truly understand what artists are like when they're like, I want to create something that makes people feel.
Hey there. Welcome to Lessons in Creativity, where we'll explore the creative process across different disciplines and learn how to harness this natural part of our human experience. I'm Jenna Massey, your fellow student and host. In this episode, I spoke with Rob Lawless. Rob started his career off in consulting, but very quickly realized he missed the close connections he had felt while in college at Penn State. He designed a project for himself called Rob's 10K Friends, where he is on a mission to meet 10,000 people, each for 1 hour, to see what can come of connection with no specific agenda. He's been working on this for the past 8 years and has been covered by The Kelly Clarkson Show, The Today Show, Ryan Seacrest, and now by me on this podcast. Listen to hear how Rob started this project, how he's reframed his mindset along the way, and what he's learned about intentional connection. All right. Welcome, Rob. So excited to have you here. Thank you for being here.
Yeah. Good to see you for now, our third interaction.
That's right. Yeah. After being on your project.
Yeah.
So I would love to take us back to Rob as a child and think about you around age 7, 8, 9. And as you think back to yourself around that age, in what ways did creativity come out? And perhaps for you too, if there was any early entrepreneurial inklings.
So creativity, I had a couple things pop into my mind. One was when I was in preschool, I drew on the walls with it was like a play bear, like an action figure bear, if you will. And I noticed that it made a mark on the wall. And so I got my friend Eric to draw on the walls with me. And I was not that type of kid. I think I was just intrigued by, oh, this is like a canvas now. So I encouraged him to draw over the wall with me. We obviously got in big trouble. My parents had to pay to have the whole thing painted. And a little bit of my entrepreneurship kicked in at that point because they were like, you have to go get all of your money from your piggy bank to bring down because you have to pay for this wall. And I was like, oh, okay. So I went up. And I got some of the money from my piggy bank and I kept some for myself. So I was like, I need to have a reserve at home for myself. So I gave them some of my money. So that was a little bit of creativity and entrepreneurship, maybe not the best ethical practices at that time. But yeah, it was always a big part of my life. I think as you move along a little bit, like my best friend in grade school, his name was Kurt. And I can remember being characters from Star Wars in the basement and just creating our own worlds. And I miss those days. A lot of my life now, I feel, is trying to get back to that playfulness of being a kid. And I was just telling the girl that I just spoke with, I was a very animated and entertaining kid, and I was always the funny one. But I feel like I used all of my life energy in ages 0 to 10, and now I'm just riding the reserves. So I've become like a much more mellow person, laid back. And yeah, I'm still a dreamer with a big imagination. But as a kid, my mind was always in a different place than where I actually was, because it was just playtime.
I love that you said you're trying now to get back to that childhood playfulness.
Yeah, definitely. That is because now I do speaking engagements around my project, and a lot of being on stage, the qualities that I had as a kid are really helpful.
Yeah.
And I had no fear when I was a kid. Like, I wanted to be on stage. And now I have to hype myself up to get there.
So as a child, you mentioned ages 0 to 10 was where you had all your energy. Were there any experiences early on that you can look back to now and think maybe those were some of the early experiences that prompted you to start Rob's K Friends? Like,
so I graduated Penn State in 2013. And when I was there, I was part of the Penn State Dance Marathon. It's a fundraiser for the fight against pediatric cancer. I joined a fraternity that was restarting. I was part of Habitat for Humanity, so I would do trips over spring breaks. I was a tour guide for prospective students. And
wow.
Yeah, and I was a homecoming captain. So I just had my hand in a lot of different things. And like the campus of 40,000 people became very small. And the relationships were very tight, too. I studied finance and I minored in accounting and entrepreneurship. And when I graduated, I went into consulting for Deloitte. So that's when I went into the cubicle and I felt like the people around me didn't really know or care to know my backstory. Not like my colleagues who were in my analyst class, they did because we were friends, but the partners I felt like they could care less about what my life was. And it was very business driven. And I went from like leadership positions on campus to feeling like the best I could do was format a PowerPoint slide or take notes on a call. And of course, you have to work your way up in those areas. But I didn't feel like I was making the impact that I wanted. And I felt like I was destined for more. So the entrepreneurship side of me was like, okay, I want to do my own thing. And I had left Deloitte after a year and 3 months, and I went to a tech startup in Philly. And I moved into Philly for that job, because before I was just living at my parents' house. And once I got to Philly, I was still feeling that way, that I wanted to get back to authentic connection without any type of agenda. So I decided that Philly was going to be my new campus, just like Penn State was. And I was going to go around and meet people, but I was going to package it into this goal to spend 1 hour one-on-one with 10,000 different people. And then that would become my entrepreneurial journey. And I met the first person in November of 2015, and it has become my entrepreneurial journey. So we're in it right now.
Wow, that's amazing. So you had this desire based on what you experienced at Penn State to move into authentic connection. But the idea to meet 10,000 people, spend an hour with them, is so unique. There's like this concept in creativity, great artists steal. I don't think there's anyone out there that was doing something like that, but I'm curious, were there people that you looked up to and said, wow, that would be a really interesting project, or they're taking a different path in life that I could potentially see myself going down?
I think so pre-idea for the project, there were a couple of big inspirations for me. One of them was The Buried Life, the TV show on MTV, and the whole concept of, people aren't familiar. So they had, it was like these four guys from Canada who would go around in this RV, and they were doing it in the States, but the whole thing was they wanted to check items off their bucket list. And for every item they checked off their bucket list, they would help a stranger check an item off theirs. So it was a very like spontaneous, chase your dreams, feel good show. And I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world. So that to me was like living what they were doing. And then I remember, I don't know if it was my senior year or my junior year, but whichever one, Casey Neistat came out with a short film, I guess you could call it, called Make It Count, where Nike gave him $10,000 to promote one of their products. And instead of doing that, he used the money to travel around the world in 8 days or something like that. And he did film it, and it turned out to, and he at the end put the Nike in, and it went viral. And it was just another one of those, like one of the quotes in that short film that he did. It was like something like, buy the ticket, book the flight, something like that. And again, that was how I wanted my life to be. Those were the kinds of things that I think I thought about and dreamt about while I was working in a cubicle at Deloitte. But it was in January of 2014. I was just thinking of what else I could do. And I knew that I missed the connection I had at Penn State. But I thought, okay, I'll meet 10,000 people for 10 minutes at a time in 1 year. And it was just so naive of me to think that would lead to anything. And I think back then in my mind, I was like, BuzzFeed will write an article on this and I'll never have to worry about working again. Like, this will be super interesting and I'll be good to go. And I didn't take action on it because it was a very bad idea. And it wasn't coming from the right place at the time. And so when I left Deloitte and went to the startup, I was doing 30-minute sales calls with people. And I realized that 30 minutes could still be surface level. So I was like, I'll double that. And then I would have time to run out of topics to talk about with people. And I'm still just scratching the surface, but at least I will be able to get to know people in an hour, in a one-on-one setting. And I flipped the idea from being an overnight success onto doing something that would take a very long time, but that would be very methodical along the way. So it very much became the journey, not the destination. And as I talked about it, I think it was even when I talked about the 10,000 for 10 minutes at a time, my girlfriend at the time lived in New York City. And I was telling her, she was one of the first people I told about my idea. And she was like, there's a guy here in New York that is doing something like that. He's trying to photograph all these people in New York. It's called Humans of New York. And so that's how I learned about his work, and he was already in it. And it's interesting because he's very big now, but if you go back to the beginning of his story, his goal was to photograph 10,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, in New York. And I still have my email to him because when my girlfriend at the time told me about him, I shot him a message and I was like, hey, must be something about that 10,000 number that we're all shooting for because I have the same similar goal. But he was someone that I paid attention to at that point because I saw for him, he had done speaking and he had done the book, became a New York Times bestseller. And I was like, okay, it's possible to do something like this and to create a living out of it. So I paid attention to him a lot during that time, but there is no one that I was like, oh, this person's doing this. It was just more my former self that inspired it because I was like, I just miss hanging out with people without an agenda.
Yeah. Wow. That's so powerful though, that you did have, that you really sought out those examples of people and had this kind of crazy idea and then found a couple of examples that you could piece together to say, wow, there's a life here that I could create that looks completely different. So you also, in making this decision, completely changed what you expected your life to look like. And sometimes that's really hard to let go of who we are in this moment, but then also who we expect ourselves to become.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any struggle with that? And then also your close circle, what was it like starting to tell them about it?
I was working at the tech startup, and then 8 months later, that company was acquired and I was laid off. So then I decided to jump into this full time in June of 2016. And that was the last time that I've worked for someone else. So to me, that was like the leap. And it's funny because people will hear my story and be like, oh, he quit his job at Deloitte to go meet 10,000 people. I didn't do that. I left Deloitte to go to the tech startup, and I didn't quit the tech startup. I lost my job because I was laid off. So my leap was like deciding not to look for another job, but to invest into what I had already been doing for 8 months. And I'd met like 100 people by that point. For me, that was very trivial. Like, I had no fear at that time because the risk was very low. And I equate, and the same thing when I left Deloitte to go to the tech startup, I tell people, I treated it with as much weight as like choosing the item at Chipotle that I want to eat. I think I'll go with this one. I don't know what it is, just part of my personality that I think part of it is because I trust that whatever I choose, I will turn it into the right option. But yeah, I decided to go into it and I was like, okay, I was laid off. I have a month of severance. I can do this full time for a month, not worry about it. But I always said I'll do it for full time for 2 to 3 months. And if it's going well, I'll continue. And if not, then I'll hop back into a job. I'll go back to Deloitte, PwC, whatever, and I'll just start making a bunch of money again. And that was the way I viewed it. The interesting thing was like the older, so I was 25 when I took it full time. Mm-hmm. And at that time, my life looked very similar to my friends. But I think as I got older, I started to see the sacrifices that I would have to make to continue this path as opposed to going into what all of my friends were doing. So they all got engaged around like 27 years old. They all got married at 28. A lot of them got a dog, and then they all bought a house at 29, started having kids in their early 30s. And none of those things were happening for me because I was dedicating my time to the project. And I think that was interesting, especially COVID. I was 30 in COVID back home. And I was living with my parents because I couldn't afford to move out. And I think there was something that was probably one of the most challenging times was being 30 years old, being in my childhood bedroom, not having the money to move out, not knowing how I was going to make the money to move out, and then not seeing how I could work on any of these other goals, like having a wife and kids eventually and having a house. So that was the difficult part, I think, was letting go. Because when I was dating that girl from New York, I was like, oh, I'll propose by 26, we'll get married by 28, we'll have a kid by 30. So I think it was letting go of those expectations along the way. But a really nice thing is at the same time, I was expanding my perspective of what life looked like. So I really lost like any notion that I would have to be married by a certain age, or I'd have to do this, or that I'd ever have to do it in general. So I started to lose those expectations because I started to meet other people who were living life differently. And that was helpful. So that was my experience. And then if you look at my parents, it was hard for them immediately for me to go from Deloitte into this more creative, like they didn't think going to the tech startup was a good idea. They certainly didn't think being laid off and jumping full time into nothing was a great idea. So they really struggled with that. And then as they saw, again, that similar path of all my friends doing things and me doing different things, in their mind, it was like, our son is failing. He's letting himself fall behind. He's not going to have the promotions, the salaries, or whatever that everyone else is having. And it really took until I started to make money through speaking that they started to let up a little bit and relax. Because I don't think there was a line, I forget what it was, but it was like, other people can't see your vision until it comes true. That, like, they only see the reality of what you've done so far. They can't see the potential that you see in your own mind. And I think that was the struggle, because my gut was telling me, keep doing this. But that's not a really good explanation to your parents as to why you're not doing a job that's making money. But yeah, and then my brother was really supportive from the very begining. My sister was hesitant, but came around. And my friends were very supportive as well. I mean, I ended up living in Los Angeles for a year and a half for free because my college roommate hosted me. I lived in Hoboken, New Jersey for 9 months for free because my friend and his wife hosted me. So my friends were like extremely instrumental in any of the success that I've had in my project.
Wow, there's a lot in there. You talk so freely about your ability to trust and commit to this project, which at the time you probably had done the math and knew that it was not just a 1 year project, right? It's a very long term engagement, really, or project that you're doing. Do you think there was anything earlier that helped you hone that ability to trust your gut and your intuition?
I think I started to look back on like the data of my life, if you will. And I can always point, like, in high school when I was a senior, I took classes at my high school, but then I also took classes at Villanova University. So it was like a program that my school was part of. So I took two classes each semester there as if I was a Villanova student. Like, the other students didn't know any different. And I failed my second microeconomics exam. And up until that point, like, I had straight A's. And I was also playing soccer. I worked part-time at a financial advisor's office. I was also the president of the Community Service Corps in the National Honor Society. So I just had a lot on my plate. And I remember studying for the final of that microeconomics exam, being very overwhelmed by it. And I think that was it was a hugely instrumental piece of my story, because I got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm very stressed about this, but this final is not going to be the determining factor of my success. Like, whether I do well on it or poorly on it, I can still be a success because I have my whole life ahead of me. And it was like one of the first times that I reframed something like that. And I think a lot of times people, they don't ever get to the reframing part. They just sit in the stress and the worry, and they let it take control of them. Yeah. So it put me at ease a little bit. And then I noticed in college that I just had a strong sense of discipline. Like, going to Penn State and getting involved early, like, I was out every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday partying with my friends. And I, like, very quickly learned how to balance that with school. I always said I'd never let school get in the way of my fun, and I'd never let fun get in the way of my school. So it was like this balance that I had to create. But I would go out Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but I would be in the library all Saturday and all Sunday. And I learned that I could trust myself to do the work and have that balance. And then when I would take tests, like, I was a very good test taker in school, and I would always know what questions I got, but then I would mark down which ones I was questionable about. So I would go back and look at those questions. And if I didn't know the answer, I would go with what my gut told me, because in my mind, I told myself, maybe subconsciously I studied something, and that's why my gut is saying that this would be the right answer. So I'll just trust that feeling. And then I would get those questions right a lot of the time. So I started to calibrate the trust in my gut through doing that. And another thing was just very simply going to the gym. If I said I was going to go to the gym 3 days a week, I would go to the gym 3 days a week. There was no like temptation, oh, I'm tired, I'm not going to do this. And that has played out into me now being like, I'm going to meet four people every day. There are no days where I'm like, oh, I don't want to do it today. It's just, I said I was going to do it, so I'm going to do it. And I think it's just the combination of all those things along the way that have led to the personality that I approach my project with now.
That's really interesting. Essentially developing a practice of consistency and keeping commitments to yourself. And was there any in that commitment aspect when you publicize that you were striving for this goal of 10,000. Did that help with your ability to keep the commitment to yourself and translate it into the daily goals once you were making that promise externally? Did you feel that was a necessary part of it?
Interestingly enough, I don't feel like it was a necessary part of it. And I feel like that's an advantage.
Yeah.
The first 8 people, like if you look back, which is hard to do now on my account, if you go all the way back to the first post, it's like January 25th of 2016 or something. But I met the first person November 11th of 2015. And then I met 3 people that January and 3 people that December and then that January. So I just wanted to make sure I was going to commit to it first before I put it out there. But once I met 8 people, I was like, okay, cool. I'm good. I'm going to do it. And then I put it out there. And I didn't even tell my friends. I didn't tell anyone that I was doing it other than the people I invited to be part of it. Because I knew in the beginning people would question it and laugh at it, which they did. But I've always said it's a silly idea until it's not. And I feel like anyone who's pursuing something creative, your idea is going to be perceived as silly until it's not. And then people flip their perception on it and then it becomes inspiring or it becomes whatever it is to them. But it's been that way ever since. I feel like there are times where a lot of people pay attention to my project. And then I feel like there are times when no one really pays attention to it. But the most important thing is that I'm still interested in it. Because I think I'm not going to get there if my motivation has to rely on something externally. So that's at least just how I feel about it. But yeah, the publicizing of it did not impact my commitment to it. But there are definitely times like when people do pay attention, you're like, oh, okay, I feel like I'm sailing with the wind at my back now. And other times you feel like you're dragging it.
That ability for you to actually keep commitments to yourself is incredible. Real attribute of what's driving the project now. I'm also curious, you were starting to talk about some of the low points and the criticism, perhaps. What is it that you think gets you through some of those low points and how do you navigate them?
I think from the beginning, it was just the belief that what I was doing would always work. And how do you define work? I don't really know. But I mean, like that it would become something sustainable, I guess. And that I would be able to finish it and build a life based on the project rather than a 9-to-5. I've just always believed, because I've always said the me who meets 10,000 people is more valuable than the me who's made partner at Deloitte. It's just the in-between is much riskier of how I get there, or much more uncertain. So I've just always believed that. So it was like, I just have to cross the bridge to the other side and then I'll be good to go. But I think what I learned through my project too, and I think the media, like the whatever publicity the project has got, has helped with this too. Because someone talks about your project, say, it was like, I was on Ryan Seacrest's radio show in 2018. Very cool. I was very nervous for it. And it's like this huge thing. So then when I heard from Ryan Seacrest's team, I was like, oh, this is the last time that I'll ever have to worry about promoting myself. I was on his radio show and it aired in the morning and there was a blip of 300 people who followed me and that was it. And it didn't change my life. And my expectation was that it was going to change my life. I myself turned something that was good into something that was negative because of my own expectations of it. And it put me in a place of doubt and I just realized, because I was like, oh, if Ryan Seacrest can't take me to the promised land, who can? So I just got to a place where I was like, I understand that confidence and doubt is cyclical. And I still believe that today. If I'm feeling confident today, I don't get too comfortable because I know that there's a doubtful me in the future heading my way.
Wow.
And if I feel doubtful, then I don't sit in that either because I know there's a confident me coming down the road. It's more of a stoic approach. I try to attach myself to the action of what I do rather than the emotion. And the action for me is meeting people. So in the dark times, like when I was 30 in COVID, not knowing how I was ever going to get out, my solution was like, I'm just going to keep meeting people because I know if I do that, whatever needs to happen will happen. And it's like having your headphones tangled. And if you just stay patient and give it some space, like you can untangle them along the way. But if you get all flustered with it and you try to make crazy moves, they get more tangled. So that has just understanding this, the cyclical nature of it and attaching myself to the action rather than the emotion was how I've navigated it.
It's amazing the level of self-awareness that you've developed too and understanding the different moods that you're going through and knowing that they're going to come back, nothing's permanent. Was there ever a time when you thought about stopping It sounds like you've been committed to this and that even in times of hardship, when others have doubted you, you've been super interested by the project and inspired to keep going. And it's been 8 years now, but I'm...
Yeah, November will be 9, yeah.
Wow. But yeah, I'm just curious, was there ever a time when you were like, you know what, I think I might have to change course here?
No, I think there were times where, yeah, in the doubtful times where I was like, okay, this might look different than I thought. Like, maybe I won't be able to sustain myself through this. Maybe I'll have to get a full-time job and do it on the side, or a part-time job. But it was always where I thought I was going to end up anyways, was continuing to do this project. So I think the closest was the summer of 2018. I had $500 left to my name. I was living with my roommate in Los Angeles, my roommate from Penn State, and he had... one of his closet doors, like in his office, had a mirror. So we used to write things on there. And I wrote this phrase from a Kid Cudi song, "The end is never the end." And it just really kept me going in that time, because I just noticed the fear of having $0 in my bank account. It kicked in a lot earlier than when I than having $0 in my bank account. So the fear wanted me to stop when I had the $500 left. But it just got to a place where my thought was that having $0 would be the end of the project. But as I got closer and closer to it, I was like, well, that's not really the case. Because if I hit $0 in my bank account, what would happen next? And I was like, okay, I would do probably a GoFundMe to get myself back on my feet. Or I would put out a request asking if anyone had a part-time job that I could do. Or I would look for a full-time job. The other thing was, I always thought that there would be a point of profitability with my project. And I wanted to get to that point as quickly as possible. And I felt by taking a part-time job or by taking a full-time job, I was just going to push that point off. And in that time, I was just like, I have different options to go forward.
It's so interesting. You've really taken the ultimate long game with your career, with relationships, your life. And it's, I think so many of us think in such short increments. It seems like you really had a vision for this that was just much longer than anyone could see.
Yeah, I think it developed along the way, because if you look at my initial emails to people, I was telling them, hey, do you want to be one of the first 10 people? I'm going to finish it in aggressively, I think, 4 years. And then I was like, oh, that's not going to happen. So I just started to learn how much longer it was going to take me. And I think that played into it. And then at a certain point too, it's almost like you think about, have you ever wanted to quit? There's a certain point where I was so invested into the project that it didn't make sense to ever quit. And like when I went out to LA that first summer of 2017, my mindset was, okay, I have to go out. Something has to happen in LA. It's got to be make or break summer. And if not, then I'm going to come back and I'm going to get a job. And then LA came and went, and I was like, all right, I just have to do this to the end of the year, because I need to give myself space to continue to work on it. And then the new year came, and this was around my parents, me moving back in with them and them questioning me and not really agreeing with my path. And fortunately for me, I was like, okay, then I'll double down on it. And it just became, I'll put everything into this. And I think as an entrepreneur and a creative, that was something I questioned a lot too, was, with my path, was I just exhausted that it hadn't worked out yet? Or was it really game over? And I think a lot of people get to that space, much like that fear of having $0 kicked in. I think people feel like they've exhausted every option. And so then they want to quit and go back to the security and the safety and the bi-weekly paycheck or whatever. But if I looked at it, I was like, I have not exhausted every option. Like, I haven't left it all on the field, and I wouldn't feel right walking away from it if I didn't do that. So it was just having that mentality kept me going. And then it turned into a very long game thing. And then I honestly feel like I was like a video game character on a quest. And then you would meet certain people and they would give you like an item that would become useful in your journey, or they would give you a bit of information and you would build up like your experience points along the way. And that's how things played out for me. Like, I do speaking now. It's pretty much 100% of my income. It's going well. And I would have not known about it as a path if I didn't meet a girl in August of 2019 who told me about her story. So like I had to go down the path to get the information to continue the journey.
It's also interesting that you weren't discovered right away. I think in some ways you may have gained a lot from that because it forced you to continue to, one, refine your mindset and your thinking and your detachment to Ryan Seacrest is going to be my big break. And it developed your practice and who you are as a person and as the things that you're doing every day. Whereas sometimes there's almost a downside of being discovered too early for a musical artist, for an entrepreneur, for anyone that's getting too much attention too early.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's like they say the quicker they rise, the quicker they fall. And I've held on to that as well. Okay, I've had a very slow come up, so hopefully I'll be hanging around for a long time. And I think recently I've been like, I don't want to be a trend. I think nowadays, so many people, they want to hop onto a viral trend, get all the followers, and then start documenting the lifestyle that they want to do or whatever. And hopefully they can continue that following.
Yeah.
But you see a lot of people who have their viral moment and then they're yesterday's news as soon as we get to tomorrow. And I'm just, the way that I think about my project now is like, I don't want it to be a trend. I want it to be something more that like people would talk about in history books. And not even that it has to be that way. Because like, I'm happy to just do it because I get so much out of it. But I want it to be that kind of approach where it is that long-term thinking now.
So you are about over 6,000 people in right now? How many people have you met with now?
I think I just met number 6,221.
Okay. What has it been like to get to know people for an hour? What do you think are some of the conditions that help you get to know them at a deeper level versus maybe the way that we might interact on our everyday lives?
Sure. I think so. Just documenting people's stories is really interesting because it created this like library of stories that people can go to and read other people's stories. I think a lot of people create their own perceptions of my project that I don't push or put out there. And then as a result, it influences the way that they act during it. As an example, I will never say that I'm interviewing people. To me, it's a pet peeve when people say that you're interviewing 10,000 people because it formalizes something that's not supposed to be formal. And if people think they're coming into an interview, they act totally different than if they think they're coming into a friendly conversation. But because I document things and people see now clips of me talking to people and they don't have another box to put me in, they're like, oh, this guy's interviewing people. And I'll tell people like, oh, I'm not interviewing people. And they'll say, oh, that's right. That's right. And then 5 minutes later, they'll say, oh, you interviewed my friend back in so-and-so. And it's one ear out the other. But the other thing is I think that people look at other people's stories on my page and they see that they've gone deep with me. So then they feel permission to go deep with their own story. And I think that's part of it. Like the other thing is weirdly, I always tell people, I don't care if we stay surface level the whole time or if we go really deep. Because for me, I'm not trying to pull your story out to entertain an audience. I'm trying to form a connection with you, the individual, and I'll share your story as a byproduct. I think when they understand that I'm coming at it from that genuine angle, that creates a sense of trust. And because I'm not pushing them in any direction, they'll just take me there on their own. So I think that is a big part of it too. And it is genuine. If I said that, but I really wanted to push and get some juicy details from their story, it would never work. But if I don't care either way, people can sense that and then they open up.
Not having any expectations for the conversation and also being okay that you're not necessarily trying to go super deep and some people, that's not how they connect right away. I'm also curious, how have you seen repeat interactions? And I think in a lot of relationships, repeat interactions are often what you build a long-term relationship out of. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure many of your 6+K friends, you've now developed deeper connections and continue to see them after. So how do you think about that versus 1 hour?
I think it's just been, a pleasant experience that when I get to see people afterwards, you understand that you are not strangers. Like you have this foundation of really knowing each other's stories. So I think it's allowed us to very easily click and build on that hour. And yeah, it's not something I've paid like too much attention to, but I think it's a very natural process to where if you see people a bunch of times, for me, start to forget that they're from the project and they just start to become a character in my life, which is great because that was something that I wanted. I wanted to have that Penn State familiarity around the world. And now I feel like I do. I run into people here in Philly all the time. I've run into people in Seattle that I've met in Philly. I've run into people in New York that I've met in LA. So it has made the world a lot smaller. But there's an interesting thing, like a study that was done. They say it takes 90 hours with someone to form like a true friendship with them. So sometimes I just think about it as, oh, we're like chipping away at our 90 hours. And when we get to that point, we'll feel like a certain level of vulnerability with each other. But yeah, it's not something that I put too much thought into, oddly enough. It's either just open the door with people and then we float in and out of each other's lives. And there's times where I won't talk to someone for years and then they'll come back into my life and then they're a big part of it for a 9-month stretch. But then I don't see them for years after that. And I think that is part of what drives me too, is just the curiosity of what does someone's life look like if they've met 10,000 people by the time they're like 40 years old? How does that impact the rest of their life? And that, I guess, we'll see.
It's so fascinating how driven by the curiosity of this you are. Mm-hmm. And it's so genuine, which is really cool. The other question that I have or thought is the difference in a closure network and a opportunity network. And I think what's so interesting about what you're developing is you're not going in with a certain intention with meeting anyone. It's not for a purpose other than, as you say, to get to know them. And so that really lends itself for an interesting connection set of friends that over time you've seen these different, probably unexpected opportunities arise from. And in a closer network where you've got fewer people, but you're deeper, might be more of an execution-based type of setting. But I'm curious what unexpected opportunities have come from these connections or unexpected events even.
Yeah, one of my favorite like ripple effects that is currently going is I met this guy, Jack, November 2023. He hits me up and he's like, hey, I run this compounding pharmacy. I'd love to be part of your project. His compounding pharmacy is like 3 blocks from where I live here in Philly. So I met him, and at this point, I had started speaking to support myself, which I was not doing back in 2018. And so I met him, and I'm telling him about my speaking career and whatnot. And he said, I belong to this Alliance for Pharmacy Compounding. We have events, and I'll put you in touch with the CEO. Maybe they would hire you sometime to speak. He introduced me the week later to the CEO of that alliance. And funny enough, their closing panel was not happening anymore, so they needed a closing keynote speaker for March in Alabama last year. So they booked me to speak, and I was like, this is awesome. Jack, he set me up with this gig. It's so cool. I could pay rent for this month. And after that speech, I asked that CEO, who are 2 people who could benefit from my message? And he put me in touch with these 2 people, and neither of them had anything for me at the time. But the one woman then followed up in, I think it was like September. And she said, hey, Rob, we have an event in India that we need a keynote speaker for. And I think you'd be good for it. We think this would be a good opportunity for you to speak on a global stage. So I ended up going to India in Bangalore back in November for 6 days as a result of Jack. And him making this introduction and then hiring me and the CEO making these introductions. So I went to Bangalore for 6 days. India was one of the top places I wanted to visit in my life. I got to meet 13 people there for my project. And it was just a very odd experience because I was on vacation for 6 days and I paid for all of it by giving a 1-hour talk on something I'm passionate about. So that happened in November. And then I think it was like a month ago. So the MC that ran the event in India, he became part of my project. And he and I became tight, and he hit me up because he emceed an event of theirs in Malaysia like a month ago. And he hit me up and he said, oh, Rob, I talked you up to the people for some of their other events. And a week later, I got a message from the same CEO who made the India introduction for me. And she said, we have an event in Berlin in September, and we think you'd be a good fit for it. So I just signed that contract last week. So now I get to go to Berlin.
Wow.
It's been like 6 days there.
Congratulations.
Yeah, like this mini world tour, all because of Jack, who I met in 2023, which if I'd met him in 2018, I wasn't speaking, it never would have led to these ripple effects. Mm. That is just one of many examples of my project. And the apartment that I'm calling in from, one of the guys from my project lives next door. That's how I found this place. Yeah, so much of who I am today is a result of the people I've met over the last 9 years.
Wow. What has it been like to start doing the speaking engagements? And what are the messages that you try to share with others that you hope that they gain from your project?
Sure. The message is that intentional connection is a worthwhile use of your time. I think people undervalue it. And I think they only think about it in terms of networking or dating. But I've seen that you have an increased sense of belonging, which is a very pleasant thing to have. You have the expansion of your perspective when you learn about people who grew up differently than you, had different sets of challenges and triumphs. And you have the opening of doors, like Jack did for me, to new opportunities that you otherwise wouldn't be able to create for yourself. So I always say every human interaction, no matter how brief, has the potential to change your life. But I think if you think about changing your life, that could be valuing time with your family differently. It could be reading a book and dedicating 10 hours to that. Like, that is you changing your life as a result of someone you met. So I try to open people's minds to that, and I give them a framework that they can use to connect with people. It's called the friend framework. So I always think about people's lives, and you talk about how do you get people to open up. I think about people's lives like a timeline, and I build out their stories by asking questions within these categories, and it's family and relationships, industry, which is like the career path, entertainment, which is like their hobbies and needs and dreams, like what are their dreams and what do they need to get there. So that's the message. And speaking has been a journey. It's been awesome. It feels really good to now be in a place where I can go take a trip to Denver and not have the weight of every purchase on my shoulders. That's new territory for me. That I had it when I was at Deloitte and at the startup a bit, but then there was like 6 years where I felt the weight of every purchase, and it's really nice to not be in that situation anymore. And now the stress is just all of the imposter syndrome of being on stage, and especially in the early days of, this person's going to pay for me to come here. They shouldn't pay me. They're going to figure me out that when I get to the stage that they made a mistake in choosing me. They should have gone with the other person that they considered. And then you go up and deliver the talk and you get such great feedback, and you're like, okay, maybe I do have something here. And that's just been a very long process of learning to trust the value of my story and that it does have an impact on people and that I'm a good speaker. Like, I've gotten people who will say, you're very natural on stage, but internally my mind is battling itself the whole time. So I'm currently in the process still of like putting that to rest, putting all the fear and the imposter syndrome to rest, and just letting my true personality come out, because that's what people want. And that's how I'm going to form the greatest connections with the audience. So it is definitely an art, and I'm learning it along the way. But I really like the idea of, one, being able to facilitate connection amongst people, and two, to be able to move them. Like, I truly understand what artists are like when they're like, I want to create something that makes people feel. It's like, I want to take people on a journey where they feel inspired, and they feel empathetic, and they feel like sad listening to stories, but then they feel joy, and then they feel excitement. So I'm in that place now, which is nice.
Mm. That's incredible. And so when you meet the 10K, what next?
I think my ultimate purpose is to infuse more empathy into the world.
Mm.
And I think I'm currently doing that through my one-on-one meetings with people. I met with someone yesterday and she had shared it to her Instagram, and she wrote a little quote, and she was like, what a nice feeling it is to have your story reflected back to you through someone else's eyes.
Yeah.
And I like giving people that experience now. And I think I'll continue to do that. I'm not going to any other big goal. 10,000 is the goal. I might go past 10,000, but you won't find me shooting for 20,000. So I just want to keep intentional connection as part of my life. And then continue to speak, because I see that as a one-to-many, like infusion of empathy, because I facilitate connections amongst people when I speak to them. And then I think I want to be a professor at a university and teach a course for first-year students, where they pair off one-on-one every class period.
Wow.
And learn from each other's backgrounds rather than a textbook or a PowerPoint slide. In my mind, I'm like, if we can create this layer where every college student is building empathy in their first year and they're understanding that some kids are on scholarship, some's parents are working three jobs to put them through there, some have a ton of loans, some aren't worried about it at all. I think you can start to create that at that age and form relationships that will outlast their time in the classroom, that will help students find their families and stay in the universities instead of transferring and whatnot. So yeah, that's like a bigger long-term goal.
Wow. What an interesting idea for a class. Rob, thank you so much for being here. I've learned so much. You're fascinating and inspiring. I guess to wrap up, I'll just ask, what advice would you give to individuals who are at the beginning of a project? And I really see the connection work that you're doing as art in a way, mm-hmm. because it really does help people bring out themselves and share with one another.
Yeah, I think I had a conversation today with a woman who's trying to meet 1 million people. And she's, wow. I know it's a crazy goal, but it's the journey, not the destination. And I very much relate to that. And I told her about a note that I've had in my wallet for years. And it's a quote, and it says, set a goal to match for what it will make of you to achieve it, which is basically saying it's the journey, not the destination. But I think a lot of people can get caught up in the destination if they're creating it's got to be like the final product of the album, or it has to be like this dance or this choreo or this art piece. And they forget that the whole point is who you're becoming as a result of working towards this goal. It's, you learn to use your instrument in this way rather than that way. And you connected with this person along the way and you had this memory. And I think if you operate with that mindset, then you fall in love with the process rather than the result of it. And then it makes it much easier to stay committed and create, because you're finding the joy in the daily and weekly moments rather than only thinking about the end result, which is going to evolve and change and look different than you thought anyways. So yeah, like all the stories that I've shared with you today, it's the process, right? And I've gotten so much joy out of going to India and being able to have this apartment and to talk to the people that I've met. That is all. I could get to 9,999 and not hit my goal, and I'd still have gotten so much out of this project. So it's not the destination, it's the journey.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Rob. I appreciate you being here. And yeah, thanks for what you're doing for everyone.
Yeah. Thank you for having me and giving me a platform to share what I've learned. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed my episode with Rob Lawless. To be part of his project, reach out to his Instagram account called Rob's 10K Friends. Thanks for listening.